Broadcasting across the United States, Canada, and around the world, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Your host for the program is Hank Hanegraaff, president of the Christian Research Institute. We're on the air because life and truth matter. For more information, call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. To start today's Bible Answer Man broadcast, here's your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
And thank you very much, Randy. It's always great to be in studio today. We have a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. I'll be talking about that in just a moment. But do remember, available to all of you that support the ministry, the current edition of the Christian Research Journal. A couple of very, very insightful articles on C.S. Lewis. We want you to become familiar with this publication, so you'll subscribe to the publication. Again, the current edition of the Christian Research Journal, available to those who support the ministry. Check it out on the web at equip.org, or simply write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And please do remember that our resource consultants are standing by, 888-7000 and the letters CRI. Now, if you've been paying any attention, you will know that millennials are leaving Christianity in record numbers. And most of them are entirely ignorant of the actual precepts and the principles of the historic Christian faith. Concurrent with that, big business has come down dogmatically on the side of the LGBTQ, I guess it's I now as well, side of the culture wars. In other words, this is no longer the country of your parents and grandparents. So if you profess a historic Christian faith, you can expect to be roundly denounced as a bigot. Christians who champion biblical paradigms regarding same-sex sexuality, or for that matter, gender fluidity, are now openly denounced as, well, racist or prejudiced. The bottom line here is that Christians have lost the culture wars and are at best adhering to a pseudo-Christian view of spirituality that has been aptly labeled moralistic, therapeutic deism, a sort of gospel of self-esteem that trumpets rugged individualism and emotivism, or the idea that all moral choices in the end are an expression of the rightness of your own subjective individualistic paradigms. And in a very prophetic sense, there was a man who looked down the corridor of time and termed the present crisis the abolition of man. He was writing during World War II about moral subjectivism and pointed out that it is both philosophically problematic and frighteningly pernicious. Well, Adam Pelser has written for the Christian Research Journal on the abolition of man, but not the abolition of man then during World War II, but the abolition of man today. In fact, that's exactly what the article is titled, The Abolition of Man Today. Dr. Pelser is an associate professor of philosophy at the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado. He lives in Colorado with his wife, Katie, and his three children, and he writes and speaks on ethics, emotions, virtues, and apologetics. I happen to be particularly proud of him because he is my son-in-law. But he is one of the most brilliant voices in the evangelical Christian world today, I would say in the Christian world in general. And one of the things, Adam, before we get into the abolition of man today, that I want you to touch on is you have a sense that we are missing something in apologetics, and that is the aspect of emotions.
Absolutely, Hank. Yeah, and that's related to what I've written here about the abolition of man today. I think C.S. Lewis, I think he saw this. He was not a scholar of emotions, but I think he recognized the importance of the emotions in our cognitive lives and the way that they relate to our rationality and our belief formation. And the emotions, I think, they help us to see. They help us to see truth. They help us to see value in the world. They help us to see goodness and beauty, but also ugliness and disvalue in the world. And a big part of what the abolition of man is about the importance of us not cutting ourselves off from the emotions, not saying, well, it's just our emotions, so I guess we don't need to listen to those, or how could those actually be getting us at any objective truth? And so I've written in a couple of places now about the emotions and talked about how they're, to use Paul's terminology that he uses for hope, they are the eyes of our hearts. They are the ways that that we see and feel the truth of value in the world. And I think that's really central to the message of the abolition of man. But because the emotions are so misunderstood today, I think even many really intelligent readers of the abolition of man miss this point about the emotions.
Let's talk about the abolition of man. When we mention the word C.S. Lewis, we immediately think of Mere Christianity. It is a book that I, quite frankly, reread every single year. It's that important when it comes to always being ready to give an answer, a reason for the hope that lies within you with gentleness and with respect. But C.S. Lewis has written many, many significant books, and I think you'd argue that The Abolition of Man is right at the top of the list.
Absolutely, yeah. I love Mere Christianity. I think it's a great book. I love so many of C.S. Lewis's books. But The Abolition of Man, I think, is arguably his most prophetic work, and maybe even his most important in terms of its analysis of current cultural trends, and of the projection of culture over the second half of the 20th century and even into the 21st century.
What is the recipe for the abolition of man?
Well, I've said in the article, I think that the recipe for the abolition of man is a sort of a three-part recipe. First, you silence moral knowledge, and then you subdue moral emotions, and then lastly, you subject humans to moral and eugenic manipulations. And I think those are the three parts of the abolition of man. And I think they're all related. And I think that's one of the things that many readers miss is the way in which these themes are related. The importance of not only being able to feel the truth through our emotions about morality, but also to speak it in our moral language and ultimately to resist the kind of manipulation that he has in mind. So what I mean by that is that essentially he's worried about this view called subjectivism. Subjectivism is a view of moral language. It says when I make a claim like murder is wrong, I'm not saying anything about the objective world. All I'm saying is murder makes me feel icky. I don't like it. I have disapproving feelings toward murder. That's all I'm saying when I say murder is wrong, according to the subjectivist. And so ultimately, Lewis says that the subjectivist makes all moral language about our emotions, and it says that emotions are unimportant. So it says when we feel bad, when we feel moral horror, when we think about the Holocaust, or when we feel indignation at dishonesty or a lack of integrity, what's going on in us is that we're just having these subjective feelings that don't tell us anything about what's going on in the objective world. They don't tell us anything about objective moral truth. And Lewis thinks this is particularly dangerous because what this does is this cuts us off from our primary means of knowing objective moral truth. It's actually the emotions. He says they're recognitions of objective value. It's through our emotions that we recognize the moral horror of the Holocaust and the badness of dishonesty or lack of integrity. That's how we see it. And so when we cut ourselves off from that and we tell ourselves, oh, we shouldn't listen to our emotions, they're just these subjective feelings, what we've done is we've cut ourselves off from the objective natural law. And now we're open to the manipulations of whoever is in charge in our society, whoever's in political or scientific power, or who has the power to control our moral education system. We're just going to listen to them and let them dictate our values for us.
Talking to Adam Pelzer, he's Associate Professor of Philosophy at the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado. The topic is The Abolition of Man Today. It's an article in the Christian Research Journal. When you support the Christian Research Institute all this month. I'd be pleased to send you a copy of the journal. You can check it out on the web at equip.org or simply write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. You can also talk to our resource consultants. They're standing by, 888-7000 and the letters CRI. One of the things you point out, Adam, or underscore, is how moral subjectivism inevitably leads to moral skepticism.
Right. Yeah, I think this is a really important insight that Lewis had in The Abolition of Man. As I said before, emotions in Lewis's view are recognitions of objective value, and subjectivism tells us not to trust those. It tells us, no, our emotions aren't actually perceiving anything that's out there in the world. And that when we say things about morality, we're only saying something about our own subjective feelings, not about objective truth. But by teaching us that all value claims are simply claims about the emotions, and that emotions are mere irrational impulses, subjectivism cuts off our heads from knowledge of objective moral value by muting our mouths and hardening our hearts. What was conceived in an ivory tower as moral subjectivism is born in popular thinking then as moral skepticism. For what can't be said or experienced can't be thought, and what can't be thought will not be believed. So if we can't say anything about objective moral truth, and we can't experience it through our emotions, then eventually we're going to lose belief in objective moral truth, and that's moral skepticism, the idea that we can't know what the objective moral truth is. Even if it's out there, we can't know it.
I was sort of alluding to this in the opening to the broadcast, that in addition to all of the profundity of The Abolition of Man during World War II, the application today is that if you do not know how to rightly speak in this area, you're going to lose the culture wars.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we definitely have a culture war going on, and what's interesting is that we're a culture that's all but given up on objective moral truth, and yet there is a kind of ethical orthodoxy that's preached from on high, that we hear from the media, that we hear from Hollywood, that we get even in our public schools, that tells us there are certain values that we really ought to have, and others that we shouldn't. And the problem is that we've lost the ability to tap into or to recognize the objective natural law, and we've given up on the idea of moral knowledge. Well, then the project of ethics, the project of saying what our values ought to be, really does just become a power struggle. It really does just become a culture saying one thing and subcultures trying to resist that. But this was a big part of Lewis's worry about the abolition of man, is that when we lose touch with the objective natural moral law, what he called the Tao or the way, when we lose touch with that, when we lose access to it, we open ourselves up to manipulation from any of the cultural influences that happened to be in power at the time.
So when Lewis was talking about the Tao, he was essentially talking about natural law.
That's right. Yeah, he was talking about the objective natural law. And you know, some Christians might be a little worried because he starts talking about the Tao, and it sounds like he's talking about Eastern religions. But I think that Lewis thought that the basic moral tenets at the heart of many of the Eastern religions are actually commensurate with the moral tenets at the heart of Christianity, and that there is a kind of universal natural moral law that most people of wisdom and of good moral character have been able to identify throughout history, and that there's something innately human in us that allows us to perceive it, that allows us to know it. He would call it maybe our reason, with a capital R, but I also think that he thinks emotions have an important role to play in our recognizing this natural moral law.
When we come back for the break, I want to talk to Adam Pelser about the practical conclusions of moral subjectivism and moral skepticism, which is bred by subjectivism. This has led to historical horrors. We have sort of swept them into the dustbin of history, or so we think, or maybe just over the transom. But we actually are facing some horrifying realities. So this is, on the one hand, enlightening from an intellectual standpoint, but there are direct ramifications to what is going on right now with moral subjectivism. Adam Pelzer will enlighten us when we come back from the break. Do remember that this is a ministry supported by listeners just like you. A lot of testimonies coming in. Paula writes, "The very first thing I do in the morning is thank God for another day to prove how much I love Him. And then I go to Facebook, read your posts. I can't seem to get enough of the vast knowledge of the Christian Research Institute you so generously share. It is food for my soul, Hank." Another testimony of a person that is being impacted in the present by the ministry of the Christian Research Institute, the Bible Answer Man broadcast, and our outreaches around the world. We're asking people to stand shoulder to shoulder with us in the battle for life and truth. What you do not only makes a difference for time, but most certainly and most importantly, for eternity. You can give in a safe, secure fashion on the web at equip.org. We'll send you a copy of the current edition of the Christian Research Journal as our way of saying thanks. We'll be right back with more of Dr. Adam Pelzer.
In his prophetic book, The Abolition of Man, C.S. Lewis forewarned that silencing moral language, subduing moral emotions, and subjecting humanity to moral and eugenic manipulations would bring disaster and death. The current issue of the Christian Research Journal looks at Lewis's warnings with a view toward the solution of not merely rejecting moral subjectivism, but also learning to speak and feel the truth of the natural moral law in love. Don't miss Adam C. Pelzer's article, The Abolition of Man, today in the current issue of the Christian Research Journal. To receive your copy of the journal as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back with more answers from the Bible Answer Man. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless, natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer Book, or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it, and historical amnesia means certain death when moral truth is forgotten. The current issue of the Christian Research Journal examines C.S. Lewis's prophetic warning that the growing acceptance of moral subjectivism and the moral skepticism it breeds would lead to a pernicious moral and eugenic manipulation of humanity. If we are to forestall the nightmarish consequences of the death of truth, followers of Christ must reject ignorance and false knowledge and deliberately learn to speak and feel the truth of the natural moral law in love. To receive the current issue of the Christian Research Journal as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go on your phone or handheld device with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. C.S. Lewis said, "A hard heart is no infallible protection against a soft head. If a society becomes blind to the life-giving light of the natural moral law, it will in the end be led to death by the base animalistic appetites of a small class of powerful individuals." As a way of grappling with the decline of truth, the current issue of the Christian Research Journal features two articles focused on Lewis's work, showing us how to speak and feel the truth in love and why not doing so is a betrayal. To receive the current issue of the Christian Research Journal as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org. And now let's rejoin your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy, and you've tuned into a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. My interview with Dr. Adam Pelzer. He is an associate professor of philosophy at the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado, and he's written an article for the Christian Research Journal called The Abolition of Man Today. C.S. Lewis, of course, wrote the book The Abolition of Man. This is bringing the issue front and center in today's culture. I continue now with my interview with Adam Pelzer. Adam, one of the things that you point out is that there is a progression of decline in culture. First, you silence moral language. Then you subdue moral emotions. Later on, you subject humanity to moral and eugenic conditioning, which leads to disastrous consequences. This is a way of saying ideas have consequences and we don't need to speculate. If we look back historically, we can know beyond the peradventure of a doubt that there are gruesome consequences.
Yes, especially in the 20th century. You know, eugenics was such a problem. And of course, we all like to look back and point our finger at the Nazis and the Holocaust and say, shame on them for engaging in a program of trying to rid the world of a race of people that they considered undesirable. And yet, what many people don't know, at least what many Americans don't know, is that even prior to World War II, there were eugenics programs happening right here in the United States at some of our most prestigious universities.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, I have pointed out in the past that President Theodore Roosevelt and Planned Parenthood founder Margaret Sanger both supported eugenics, and eugenics was funded through philanthropies like Carnegie and Rockefeller and carried out at, you mentioned, prestigious universities. I mean, Stanford, Harvard, Yale, Princeton. And legislation, and this I think is really interesting, legislation to address the concern posed by eugenics was passed in blue states from North Carolina to New York to California. And it was even backed by the National Academy of Sciences and the American Medical Association. And if you resisted eugenics, you were considered backwards or ignorant. That was sort of a conversation stopper. Can't talk about this in a negative way because you're backward, you're ignorant. It wasn't until this reached its consequence in the German death camps that we suddenly came to a reality where we recognize that you start down this path and everything's up for grabs.
That's right. And in some ways, you know, the Holocaust had at least this one good benefit, which was that it opened our eyes to the horrors of eugenics. Now, that's not to say that the Holocaust is something that we should be grateful for, that we should applaud. This is a horrible, horrible event in human history. But we need to open our eyes to the undercurrent of eugenics that was ultimately at the heart of the Holocaust, and that was happening here in the United States and in Europe, places outside of Germany, well before the Holocaust. And in fact, what's really shocking and disturbing is that even in spite of the widespread moral horror evoked by the Holocaust, the U.S. continued to have laws and institutions for decades that supported the forced sterilization of incarcerated criminals, minorities, and the mentally disabled. I give one example in my article of the Indian Health Services here in the U.S. that forcibly sterilized over 3,400 Native American women without their permission between the years of 1973 and 1976. That's the mid-70s. Even in the mid-70s, we were still forcibly sterilizing without consent. People that we deemed unfit in one way or another, and that's really, really troubling. And we still see this in certain biotechnologies today, things like pre-implantation genetic diagnosis that's intended to determine whether the embryos created through in vitro fertilization might have some a probability of having an inherited disease, and if they do, then they are discarded. And this is a tragic kind of eugenics that's happening even still today in the U.S.
Talk about this from the standpoint of a Christian worldview. I mean, you and I both believe in the Imago Dei, that every single human being is made in the image and likeness of God, and therefore a Down syndrome baby has the same value as a distinguished scientist.
Yeah, absolutely. We are each one of us made in the image of God, and as a result, have equal ontological status. We have equal moral worth. We have equal human dignity, regardless of our race, regardless of our sex, regardless of our nationality. And the idea that some human lives are more worth living than others is just an unchristian idea, and it's an idea that's at the heart of eugenics. And unfortunately, you mentioned Down syndrome babies. You know, Hank, when Katie was pregnant with our three children, your grandchildren, and we went to the doctor with every single one of our children, the doctor asked us if we wanted to do prenatal testing to see if our child might have Down syndrome or other similar conditions. And of course, I think there is some value in this kind of testing in order to prepare for how to raise a child that might have some special needs. But unfortunately, so often this testing is really used as a deciding factor on whether or not to have an abortion, whether or not to bring this baby who is alive in the womb into the world. And that in and of itself is already a tragic kind of eugenics.
Talk about what's going on in our culture with respect to transgenderism. I was reading a couple of testimonies of transgender people who went to psychologists, said, yes, you are a woman trapped in a man's body. You need to start going through hormone treatments. You need to be genetically altered, as it were, so that you can be a woman in the truest sense of the word. The person, as a result of this narrative, ends up becoming transgender. It becomes a horror to them, but they can't go back. So the narrative has created havoc in the lives of so many people. We can't uncritically buy into these narratives. And if we have a truly Christian worldview, we have an answer to the culture that's far more helpful.
Yeah, Hank. I think first I need to say that when I speak about these, especially these really controversial issues, it's important for me to issue a disclaimer that I'm not speaking on behalf of the U.S. government or the U.S. Air Force, the U.S. Department of Defense. I'm speaking for myself here. But certainly, I think as Christians, we need to show the utmost love and respect for members of the LGBTQ community and those who are transgender. But we also live in a time when we're told not to defend unpopular views. And at the Air Force Academy, I teach a course in the philosophy of love and sex. And one of the things that I encourage my students to do is to treat this as a place where they can defend views that are maybe unpopular in the culture. Maybe they think they're unpopular in our classroom, that they certainly don't need to try to hold whatever view it is that they think that I hold, and that they need to, when they defend their views, whatever their views, they defend them with respect, that they ask good questions, that they try to seek for the truth, but that they also treat those who disagree with them at the end of the day with respect and with civility. And I think the unfortunate thing is that our culture is telling us that some views are off limits, and that we there are some views that we just can't defend. And what that does is it eliminates our ability to disagree with one another with respect and with civility. And I think Christians need to be a model of that in our culture. I think Christians need to be a model of defending truths, even if they are culturally unpopular, with the utmost gentleness and with the utmost respect and with the utmost civility and with the utmost love. I think that's what we're called to as Christians, to engage with the culture, and I think we can model that for culture. And I think when we do that, we don't have to be dogmatic. We don't have to be arrogant. We don't have to be prideful. We can be confident in our moral knowledge. We can be confident in our spiritual knowledge, even while remaining humble, even while recognizing that that we might be wrong, being willing to listen to arguments from others, being willing to consider their arguments carefully. I think we can do all of that and yet still hold our moral views confidently, and certainly hold our religious views confidently. And that's one thing that I think that we've lost in our culture, and I think it's a shame, and I think that's something that that Christians need to bring back. And as I say in the article, it's not just confident humility that we need, or humbly confident moral knowledge. It's also loving condemnation of evil. When we condemn evil, when we condemn acts of terrorism, when we condemn things like this this recent chemical, what appears to be a chemical warfare attack in Syria, when we condemn those things, it is okay to condemn it, to know that it's wrong, but also to do so lovingly, and to love even our enemies. That's what Jesus called us. That's what Jesus has called us to, and I think we need to model that in culture better than we do.
I bring up transgenderism only in that this is very much related to the problem of subjectivism and moral skepticism.
Yes, I think we have given up on the idea that we can say or know what's true in the realm of morality. And largely that's because people are afraid to be arrogant. They're afraid that claiming to know something is true in the moral realm is kind of bigoted already. You're already being arrogant and prideful and thinking that you can know the moral truth, and that someone else who disagrees with you might be wrong. That's already a problem. I mentioned in the article how I've taught in multiple universities around the country, and the vast majority of the students I've taught across the United States believe that murder and genocide and rape and other violent and harmful acts are wrong, but many of them are very hesitant to say with any confidence that they know that those horrific acts are wrong. They'll admit to believing it, but then if you say, but do you know it, they'll say, well, I don't know, it's my private view, and I'm not sure how I could know this, and there's people who disagree. And so I think one of the things that our culture has done is it's removed the permission to say with any confidence that a particular act or lifestyle might be wrong, or that other actions or lifestyles might be good and healthy for human beings.
Talking to Adam Pelzer, he's an associate professor of philosophy at the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado. Happens to be my son-in-law, but he obviously is an apologist in his own right, and what he's doing in the university is very, very significant. His writing is going to make a mark on this generation. We'll be back in just a few moments with more of Adam Pelzer right here on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Do remember, available for your support, the current edition of the Christian Research Journal, which contains Adam's article on the abolition of man today. Check it out on the web at equip.org. When I come back, we'll also be giving you the quote of the day. Stay tuned for that.
Beware of false knowledge, said George Bernard Shaw. It is more dangerous than ignorance. In our increasingly secular and politically correct society, where fake knowledge has had a long-running start on fake news, the value we should place on knowing and speaking truth and love has never been greater. To equip you to know, feel, and speak truth and love, the current issue of the Christian Research Journal features a fresh look at the work of C.S. Lewis, one of the greatest Christian thinkers of the 20th century. To receive the current issue of the Christian Research Journal as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be back in just a moment with more from Hank Hanegraaff. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go on your phone or handheld device with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day, or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Parents want their children to know what they believe and why they believe it, and to love the right things in the right way. But it's not easy to retain the attention span of children for a lecture in apologetics. Three ways to teach your kids apologetics without them realizing it. Other topics include how to approach apparent contradictions in the Gospels, C.S. Lewis, Defender of the Faith, and much more. To receive the current issue of the Christian Research Journal as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless, natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer book, or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. C.S. Lewis was the greatest apologist of the 20th century, and he continues to serve as a practical role model today for winsome Christian apologetics. The current issue of the Christian Research Journal perceptively identifies several lessons we can learn from observing Lewis's approach. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. To receive your copy of the current issue of the Christian Research Journal as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. And now, here's Hank Hanegraaff.
there, much, Randy, and we start this segment out with the quote of the day. It comes from Rod Dreher. He is a brilliant commentator on the culture. He's pointed out that from the inside, American churches are hollowed out by the departure of young people and by a sort of insipid pseudo-Christianity. But from the outside, they're beset by the challenges to religious liberty in a rapidly secularizing culture. And so we end up crying out, what in the world as Christians? What in the world went wrong? Well, the quote of the day from Rod Dreher, who said, quote, American Christians are going to have to come to terms with the brute fact that we live in a secular culture, one in which our beliefs make increasingly little sense. We speak a language that the world more and more either cannot hear or finds offensive to its ears. And so we need to learn in this culture to do what Christians have always done. Always be ready to give an answer or reason for the hope that lies within you with gentleness and with respect. I continue my conversation now with Adam Pelzer, an associate professor of philosophy at the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado, where he lives with his wife, Katie, and their three children. He is my grandson, so we're talking about my grandchildren, and they are, well, they're something else. He writes and speaks on ethics, emotions, virtues, and apologetics. And Adam, I was thinking, maybe you can elucidate the difference between morals and ethics. Is there a difference there?
Well, I don't think there's nearly as sharp of a difference as some people want to draw between morality and ethics. So some people try to draw this line and they say, well, ethics is, that's sort of like the formal principles of an institution, say a business's ethical principles or even a nation's ethical principles. And that morality is, you know, your personal moral views that you hold, you know, in private and the things that you may choose not to do or to do, but that you wouldn't expect other people to follow those same moral values. And I think the clear problem with this is that where are you going to get your ethical principles from if not from your personal moral values? I was recently at a business ethics workshop with a number of business ethicists, and I think I must have ended up there by mistake because when they found out I was a philosopher, they indicated that they didn't really want me there. They thought I was going to bring in a whole bunch of criticisms of their business ethics principles. I think they were afraid that I was going to encourage moral subjectivism, actually, that I was going to say ethics really is just about subjective views. But I think the problem is that then, in order to protect themselves from that, what they did is they draw this distinction between morality and ethics, and they try to keep morality in the personal realm and ethics in the public or professional realm, and that just can't be done because you just can't get true ethical principles without personal moral knowledge that some things are right and some things are wrong. If you don't know that murder is wrong and that honesty is a good thing, if you don't know that courage is noble and that integrity is to be admired, then how are you going to bring any kind of moral substance to the ethical principles that you follow in your corporation or in your community or in your church or in your country?
You have taught at quite a number of prestigious universities in the United States, so I suppose you know as well as anyone what's going on within the university structure. What's your take on sort of the abolition of free speech or the open exchange of ideas?
Well, I'll tell you, there's lots of places where there isn't a whole lot of open exchange of ideas. There's certainly some issues that are just quite simply off limits if you have the wrong view, so to speak. And that's unfortunate. You know, the university is supposed to be a place where there is an open and respectful dialogue and a unified search for truth. University, the word itself comes from the Latin words uni and veritas, meaning one truth. This institution is supposed to be a collective search for the truth in all disciplines, and you can't do that if you just silence from the outset unpopular views. Unpopular views need to be heard, if only because they can sharpen our minds and our thinking and help us to know why we disagree with them, if we do disagree. But the problem is our culture has lost the ability to disagree respectfully. we've turned every argument in the philosophical sense into an actual argument where we're fighting with one another and where we're just trying to shout over one another. And the person with the loudest voice oftentimes ends up winning. And that's not what a university should be. That's not what our culture should be. Our culture should be a place where we respect one another enough to think highly enough of each other's rational abilities that we can actually argue with one another and try to pursue the truth together. And when we disagree, do so respectfully and civilly, and with the 1 Peter tells us, with the utmost gentleness and respect.
Talking to Adam Pelzer, and he wrote the article for the Christian Research Journal, the current edition of The Abolition of Man Today. He was talking, of course, about C.S. Lewis's book, The Abolition of Man, which was written during World War II. The Christian Research Journal, available for those who support the ministry all this month. Once you see it, hopefully you will be hooked. You can check it out on the web as you give in a safe, secure fashion at equip.org, or write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Our resource consultants, as always, standing by, 888-7000 and the letter CRI. Adam, can you explain one more time what we're talking about when we're talking about the abolition of man, either in the sense that C.S. Lewis was talking about it or its ramifications for the abolition of man today?
Yeah, I really think they are one and the same thing. I think the abolition of man today is precisely what Lewis envisioned, and that is that when you cut humanity off from knowledge of the objective natural law, the objective moral law, as subjectivism does, as moral relativism does, as this sort of modern elevation of tolerance above all other virtues does, when you cut people off from their knowledge of the objective moral law, what you do is you set them up for manipulation. You set them up for moral manipulation in terms of moral education. They're just going to be sort of tossed to and fro by the values of whoever the ruling powers happen to be. Lewis calls them the conditioners in his book. But also you set them up for this problem of eugenic manipulation, that with current modern biotechnologies, we're actually able to condition human beings to be biologically what we want them to be. But of course, that's not a power that most of us hold. That's a power that's held by the political and scientific elites in our culture. And so once again, we have a sort of conditioning class that can make man into its own image, that can make humanity be whatever it wants to be. And Lewis says this is the abolition of man, because once that has happened, you are no longer being ruled by reason or by knowledge of the objective natural law. Now what your actions are being guided by are your own natural instincts, your own animalistic appetites, those of the conditioners anyway, the appetites of those who are in power. That's what's conditioning humankind. And so in a way, nature has actually abolished mankind, that the natural instincts have now taken over, and that what made human beings, namely their reason, their ability to know the natural law, that's now been eliminated, and what's left is just a base animalistic appetite that's going to determine who gets to live and how they're going to live and what values they're going to have.
Adam, you've pointed out that in order to prevent the abolition of man, that we as Christians must help others learn to emotionally perceive, in other words, feel the truth of the natural moral law and vicariously the costs of rejecting that moral law. What do you mean by that, and how can we do that effectively?
Well, I think the key is that we have to remember that our emotions are not just these private sort of subjective experiences that are irrational. They are the way that God has created us to see or to perceive or to feel the truth of the natural moral law. We see the wrongness of murder through our indignation and moral horror at it. We see the evil of the Holocaust through our horror in response to it. We see the virtue of the best among us, of Jesus himself, through emotions of admiration and even awe and reverence in Jesus' case. These emotions humans, they tap into something. Now, unfortunately, because of sin, they get things wrong a lot. We fear things we shouldn't fear. We get angry when we shouldn't get angry. And so many of us are led to distrust the emotions altogether. But Lewis's answer is not to distrust them altogether, but rather to fix them, to learn to appreciate the value that really is there in the world and to see it appropriately through our emotions. And I think one of the ways that we can do that is that we can tap into the emotional responses that people already have to good and bad, to beauty and to ugliness in the world that are accurate, that haven't been totally ruined by their sinfulness. So, you know, when we see images of for example, the terrible nerve gas attack that happened in Syria. This is an awful event, and the footage is just terrible, and it ought to make us feel not just compassion and a deep compassion for the victims, but also a kind of a moral indignation. If in fact this was a targeted attack, we should feel a kind of moral indignation, a moral horror toward those responsible for the attack. And that's right, and that's appropriate, and that's a good thing. We ought to feel those things, and if we don't, then we need to learn how to cultivate those proper emotional responses in our hearts. And I think Christians can do this through a number of ways, but I think one of the best ways is to start with the emotional perceptions people have that are already right, and just give them permission to feel those things and to believe accordingly.
Talking to Adam Pelser. The Abolition of Man Today. It is in the current edition of the Christian Research Journal as a premier article, the magazine available for those who support the ministry prayerfully and financially. Check it out on the web at equip.org. Adam, obviously, I'm very, very proud of the work that you're doing, and it is wonderful to have you on the broadcast, and look forward to seeing your words in print all over the world.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Hank. It's been great to be with you as always, and I always love opportunities to publish my work in the Christian Research Journal. It's such a great resource, and I hope all your listeners will go out and pick up a copy. It's got a lot of great articles in it. I'm not speaking about my own, obviously, but all the other great articles is definitely worth picking up for those.
Adam Pelser, again, he's Associate Professor of Philosophy at the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado, available for those who support the ministry, the Christian Research Journal, the current edition. We'll send it out to you. Hopefully you'll get hooked on the Christian Research Journal. Check it out on the web at equip.org or simply write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Do remember, we do what we do because life and truth really do matter. So long for now.
Thank you for joining us today. Our mission at the Christian Research Institute is to equip Christians to think and live Christianly. In appreciation for your gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, Hank Hanegraaff would like to send you a copy of the current issue of the Christian Research Journal. Topics include C.S. Lewis and the Abolition of Man, the ethics of modern board and card games, three ways to teach your kids apologetics, and much more. Just call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271, or simply visit online at equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go on your phone or handheld device with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. C.S. Lewis was the greatest apologist of the 20th century, and he continues to serve as a practical role model today for winsome Christian apologetics. Donald T. Williams perceptively identifies several lessons we can learn from observing Lewis's approach. Other topics include the abolition of man today, three ways to teach your kids apologetics without them realizing it, how to approach apparent contradictions in the Gospels, and much more. To receive the current issue of the Christian Research Journal as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org.